Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Well, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from somewhere off the fall season shores of South Korea's extended traditional Thanksgiving Peninsula, you've tuned in to episode 78 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. The blind will see, the deaf will hear, but those who choose reason will never understand what lies behind the veil. Hopefully helping to set the tone for the month of October, Missouri-based mystic and author M. Teresa Clayton returns to the Robin Hood this week after nearly a year-long hiatus. Her books cover a variety of genres and writing styles, including the widely acclaimed Mystic Verses, Storyteller, Nine Shorts of Speculative Fiction, her own horror novella, as well as Narrative Biography of Gabriella Garza Padilla, and a children's book, The Garden of Secret Wishes. Known by many of her fans and followers as The Mistress, Teresa was born in Savannah, Georgia, back in the mid-1950s, and raised in Florissant, Missouri, after her father took a job as an engineer at McDonnell Douglas. She attended school in the Hazelwood District and graduated with a B.A. in Sociology from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Over the course of this week's episode, we aim to explore any number of topics relating to her life as an author and mystic, including clairvoyance, indigo children, and the all-too-enigmatic state of synesthesia. Assuming things go well, we may even ask her to join us once again in the last week of October as we cap off the month with our annual Halloween Roundtable. Very much looking forward to that end of the month Halloween Roundtable too. We've got a new system here up and running. The OBS Classic has been set to the side for the moment, and we have now the more, I suppose, semi-professional, at least, studio mode. A few technical matters on top of that we've tried to work out here for this show, including getting Teresa set up on Skype. So if you can hear me, Teresa, now might be a good time to come into the conversation. Things are coming through. Manage to unmute yourself. Are you there?
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, great. That's wonderful that you managed to make it. And we'll have to just check on the stream we have coming through via the chat area in YouTube to see whether or not we've got much of a, well, just how our sound quality is exactly here. So, hey, great to have you back. It's been almost a year, not quite. I think it was episode 37 last year we had you join us around, well, it was the Halloween Roundtable special. I can't recall exactly who was with us at that time other than myself, you, and Pirate Larry, who, unfortunately, I don't know if you heard the story or not. There's three different potential scenarios, though. One is he fell from the crow's nest and it was lost at sea. Another rumor going around is he was jumped by a handful as a crew of from a rival vessel here in Skullport Harbor, and not sure what ended up happening there exactly, or that he was somehow lured and seduced by a sultry mermaid out on the high seas. So we're not sure exactly, but we do miss him. It was great having him, and he really helped to add a lot of color to the show.
Yes, he did.
Actually, the two of you have quite a history there. You've collaborated on one musical piece or two, at least, I think. As it was, I think, just once again, to recap and refresh listeners' memories, if they had a chance to listen to last year's show, you and Larry met, in fact, via...
MySpace.
There you go, exactly. Do you want to just... let people know, give people a bit of an overview or rundown of how that all came about?
You know, back on MySpace days, it was so easy for everybody to find one another. The synchronicity there was just unbelievable, so profound. And then it was completely divided. I'm so sorry to have seen it go. Facebook doesn't hold a candle to what MySpace had for us. But we met, and he had the perfect voice and the perfect ability to play a 12-string guitar and put to music one of my verses, one of my poems, which was given to me by the others, by the way, which is called The Witch. And he did a beautiful job with it. We will be collaborating again, so please look for it. It's about the children and the mothers in Syria. And it'll be quite different than anything else I think you've experienced musically. It's in the book, Mystic Verses, so you may be able to find it. But I'm just not going to read it tonight. I will start with a reading, though, from the book. I want you all to know that you can go to, and I'll put that link up right now, to www.lulu.com. And then / let me just write it down for you. It's just so much easier, isn't it? If I put it down, then you actually have the book in your hand and you can follow along if you'd like.
Yeah, you've got actually quite a few links there. Mystic Verses, I think, is one of the URLs, of course, which is the title of probably your best known production or creation, literary work to this point, from what I understand. You have a Facebook page, of course. Minds.com is one of the platforms that we're trying to actually, well, we've suggested you maybe make a little more effort, take a little more time to look at and become familiar with. It's one that we spend a lot of time over on, presenting all kinds of great creative content and generating all sorts of as much positive synergy as we can. Go ahead. You had something you were hoping to share with us?
Well, I believe that I'll wait until those people who wish to go over and download that PDF can do that. I'll give it a little bit of time, and then we'll come back and revisit that. But whenever you're ready to get started, I'll go ahead and give you the introduction to consciousness, and then I'll introduce you to my others. My others are intradimensional beings, and there are three types, interdimensional, intradimensional, and extradimensional. I'll give you the definition of all three, and I'll introduce you to my others, and they may come out and play. So is everybody ready?
Yeah, actually, your link, as far as that goes, what you could do is just copy and paste it into the live streaming chat over on YouTube. We have around, it looks like, 7 people at the present moment that have decided to drop in and be a part of things, so that's great. Big shout out, of course, to the two Pirate Joes. Great to see you teaming up again this week. The audio sounds to be from the reports that we're hearing from the technicians on the other end of things here, the receiving end, the listening audience, pretty decent, so that's good. Although we're getting we're getting some reports or notifications here saying that YouTube is not receiving enough video to maintain smooth streaming. As such, viewers will experience buffering. So if you do, folks out there in YouTube land, have any buffering issues, do let us know and we'll see what we can do about that. Is there any chance, though, Teresa, that you'd be able to just share the Lulu link, just copy and paste it into the YouTube chat?
Yes, I can. I have to take the www off. It's not going to allow me to do it. Okay, so you all know that it starts with that, right? Okay, so here we go again.
That's one of the weird things I just don't understand. You know, there's a lot of people that are not too happy with the state of affairs, the way YouTube has been structuring its operations. As with Facebook, it seems, too. It's as if they don't really gear themselves towards social interaction and, you know, real genuine networking so much as it seems they want to make every effort and take every step possible to restrict the ability for people to communicate and connect and allow, facilitate the free flow of information, which includes something as simple and straightforward here, in this case at least, as an example of sharing a URL link. You know, I mean, come on. They could. What's up with that? So that's one of the things I think that if you've spent time over on Minds.com, you'll find that there is no censorship, and with the open source format that the people working there on the back end of things, handling the coding, are doing pretty much everything they can to make it as, well, user-friendly and welcoming as possible rather than the opposite. So, yeah, you've got your book there via, it's lulu.com/spotlight/ M. Teresa Clayton. So, folks, just copy that and check things out. And we can, I think, is what you suggested in the pre-show interview, just the brief talk that we had before going live, that maybe with your, I think you call them the interdimensional beings, the entities, people could follow along once we get into that. And verse by verse, talk a little bit, of course, about mystical writing and so forth. And see how that goes. But before we do, let me just ask you, what's the M for in Teresa Clayton? It really, I got a little confused there in putting the show together and had it written out Teresa M. Clayton, but that's not the case. Why the M?
The initial of my first name, and it just, my name is very lengthy. So rather than try to put my entire name on the cover of a book, I shortened it to M. Teresa Clayton. Most people call me Teresa. The M stands for Mary.
Oh, I see. How about that? So most people call you Teresa, or I guess some of your more intimate associates, Mistress.
Yes. Yes, and those who are even more close to me actually call me Mother, Mom, Mama C, Mama T. I get a lot of that. I think the highest name one can, or, you know, title one can be given is that of mother. So there are a few who do finally come about and call me mother, which is fine. I'm 61 years old. I could be everybody's mother.
Pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. Almost old enough to be my mom. more of an auntie or older sister, I suppose. That kind of deal, but we'll just maybe set that aside for the moment and carry on here. But now I know one of the things that you first mentioned in putting the show together, one of the topics you were hoping to discuss was synesthesia, which I have a tough time pronouncing. Before we get into that, though, why don't we just back up? Why don't we set the stage here and actually just give people a bit of an overview and introduction to who M. Teresa Clayton is, a little bit about your biographical story and history.
All right, I'll be fine. I'll be happy to do that for you. First of all, synesthesia is a subject all in and of itself, so that would take up an hour and a half right there. But for those who are interested, most creative people are synesthetes. I personally can see sound, a touch sound, and I have other types of synesthesia that I would get into when we have that discussion. But as M. Teresa Clayton, back in my MySpace days, my followers, my fans, my friends, all dubbed me the mistress because I was a mystic and seemed, I guess, the most appropriate thing to refer to me as. And it's been a very loving sort of nickname that they've attached to me, and I've embraced it. So a lot of times I do allow people to call me mistress, and it's not because I'm, you know, nose up in the air or anything. It's just a very loving and humbling title. I have a lot of gifts. My parents were not the type of parents that would ever silence. So I was very fortunate in the fact that my imaginary friends were not imaginary. They were real. And we're going to get into that in just a few seconds. Not only that, but I was encouraged to embrace the things that I felt that were out of the norm. It made it strange for me when I got into school because I was picked on a little for it. But as a whole, I'm really glad I maintained a relationship with my metaphysical side. I can do remote viewing, and I do work with police departments here in St. Louis and Illinois in trying to find people. I can hear the dead. They speak to me. I'm clairaudient. I can also sometimes summon them. I wouldn't say that I'm 100% necromancer, but I'm somewhat of a necromancer. So I can call them occasionally, but they have to be willing to come. I don't force them to. I do have a relationship with a group of angels that a lot of people think are evil, but they're not, and they're called the Nephilim. If you'd like to know more about the Nephilim, I'd be more than happy to explain that to you because they, too, interact with my others. As a matter of fact, while you were trying to correct something just a little while ago, I asked one of my Nephilim to help you, and you immediately found your answer. I have other things that I'd like to discuss with you, but there are just so many to list. I do teach metaphysics, and I do teach meditation. It's a different kind of meditation. I teach 5 different types, and those may sound familiar to you, but I'll take you much deeper. Because in order for you to express your metaphysical self, you have to be able to lose your ego, put your ego out of range, and leave yourself completely open and vulnerable. So that's just a little bit of my bio.
I think since we last spoke, you actually were married as well to a new husband, along with, I'm not sure exactly what, but is there anything else that you care to share as far as how things have been going over the past year? What projects have you had on the go and been busy with?
My personal life is really funny. He does not believe in ghosts, but tells me if he sees one, he's out of here. I am married. Yes, I am married again. My first husband passed away, and I met Scott. Scott's a wonderful human being. He tries not to believe in the things that I do, even though he gets affirmations and validations from people that we come into contact with all the time. He tries not to belittle me or call it bullshit, but he'll straight up tell you he doesn't buy into it. It's not something he can wrap his mind around. And again, you can't tell me that you don't believe in ghosts and then within the same moment tell me that if you see one, you're going to run. So evidently he does, but he doesn't want to. So I have the epitome of the denier as my husband. So I'm used to having people question me.
It's something, I guess, that we all have to get used to, I suppose, when it comes to anything. Any position we take in life and society on an issue or a belief system, there's bound to be detractors. In fact, I think Aristotle, his way of putting it, I'm paraphrasing now, of course, but the only way for one to be free of criticism in this life is to do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing. So we live in a diverse world, people coming at all sorts of directions and all sorts of traditions, and we're shaped by many multitude of influences, and the vast range of different ways of viewing the world and ourselves, or what is it exactly we're doing here in this form, as temporary as it is, of course. That's just the way things are. But let's just let people in a little bit more on your family lineage then. Apparently, as I recall, you come from a tradition of and a family of dowsing witches. So maybe if you could share a little bit about how that all works. And in our first show that we did, you actually, there's a story of you cursing intuitively this young girl that was in your class who had, I guess, in some way you felt done you wrong. And she ended up having a bit of an accident.
I'm going to have to address a little bit more, because I've been on a journey this past year to find out more about my, I'm an O negative, and I don't know how many people out there are familiar with extraterrestrial beings, but O negative people are considered to be the offshoots of extraterrestrial beings. And I'm very good friends with a few of the people who are on Ancient Aliens, and Nick Redford had actually sent me a book on the blood that I have, the O negative blood. It's the bloodline of the gods. Our family is born with extra digits, you know, like Hemingway's cats. And we have these surreal, ethereal type of gifts that have been given to us. And we have a great interest in aliens. I'll just say it just like that. But anyway, I went to a past life regression, learned a whole lot of stuff through that. Also learned quite a bit about my family lineage. And in that family lineage, there was not just dowsing witches, there were actual witches. So that was very interesting to find out from my relatives that it wasn't just my grandmother who was a dowsing witch, which, by the way, for those who don't know, is a witch who could find oil or water or any kind of liquid on your land by holding the cherry tree branch, or I think everybody has their own specialty. Hers, I believe, were cherry tree branches, and they're in the form of a Y pointed to the ground, and actually the roots, the actual bark will twist right off of the wood. But that said, going back even further, and it seems to be maternal, her mother was also a witch, and her mother before her was a witch. And I'm getting ready to do a little bit of studying on our family history. We have a good genealogy department here at our library in St. Louis, and I want to go down there and check out some of the history of the women on my mother's side. It would explain a lot. Now, in addition to that, I have 5 grandchildren by one of my daughters, 3 by the other. The one who has 5 children, 4 of them are old enough now to have displayed their own metaphysical properties. They can see ghosts. They have seen their dead grandfather. The one, it scares him a little bit, so he sleeps with his mother quite a bit, because Grandpa Rex comes into the room at night to kind of check on the boys. I have another one who is clairsentient and was misdiagnosed as being autistic, and which was very sad, because she's not autistic at all, as it turns out. She's just clairsentient and doesn't know how to handle all of the information coming into her. So we're working with her. And my oldest granddaughter, who was born with cancer and possesses the Dicer-1 gene, is a healer. And there's a lady who lives catacornered across the street from me who had a brain tumor. And it was growing, and they didn't know how they were going to get to it. It was in an unreachable place. My granddaughter laid her hands on this woman and took the tumor right out. And the next time she went to go have her brain scan done, there was nothing left of it. It's very interesting how it passes. My daughter does not have these, or that I'm aware of, does not have these qualities. So it kind of missed a generation. Just like my mother did not have these qualities, it missed a generation. But going up, you know, back in my lineage, it seems like all of them had it. So I don't know if it was just because they were more open to it. You know, we have a lot of silencers in the world. who want to tell us what is and what is not true, or what is or what isn't, you know, actuality, which is why I've gone to the quantum side, because quantum science is now validating everything that I am and I do.
How about that? Quantum physics, which is really beyond me, although I guess when we're talking such things, we're looking really at phenomenon throughout the cosmos that occurs and exists on the micro level versus the more macro state of what essentially when you look to the sky is out there in a larger universe. Is that not the case?
And I really do believe in synchronicity, so I believe that you're already in my mind. I wanted to talk about the different levels of dimension. And it's not from where we stand and it emanates outward. It also emanates inward. So if there are 12 dimensions outside of us, there are 12 dimensions inside of us. So we can't lose sight of the fact that we are not standalone entities. We don't just stand and experience the world without having some effect on our reality. Whether or not we're aware of it or we're not aware of it, the old saying is we create our reality. We have multiple realities, and quantum mechanics is now working on that with CERN and doing many experiments where they're taking atoms in situations like that and showing that they can be in three places at the same time, experiencing three different things. So as you and I are sitting here having this experience, you and I are also having this experience in another realm, and again in yet another realm, and having different reactions.
How about that? Although, of course, this all occurs on a level which is largely beyond the five senses. So I'm not sure how to break that down exactly. Although I would say that myself in particular, and everyone here on the Robin Hood, of course, comes at these matters from their own unique view and perspective, but I've long believed that we are all, as humans, possessed by spiritual entities or energies of some sort. There's no doubt about that. That's what makes us, that's why we're alive, I suppose. So the ancient Greeks, though, traditionally would refer to, the word that they had for happiness was eudaimonia, which literally meant the good demon within. So, you know, people talk about spirit possession. I'm sure you know a little bit about that and maybe can address that whole matter, your thoughts of how it works and so forth. But their view, I guess, was simply that if you were happy, that it was the demon within was in a good state. The saint, of course, too, a spiritual or holy religious saint, if you look at that word, it just means that their house is clean, I guess, their inner spiritual being. They've taken care of things within themselves. Alcohol is another interesting one, too. Of course, alcohol, it's known as spirits. So, and how people change when they drink, that's quite something to note. But if you want to talk about spiritual possession, perhaps, that would be quite something. Are we kind of on the same wavelength here as far as...
You got ahead of me again, but that's okay.
I'm a little ahead of you. Okay.
We're just going to go with it. When my husband passed away, he was gone for about a month. I began immediately the day after he passed keeping a journal, because we had an agreement. Whoever went first would, if they could, come back and describe what it was like. After about a month, I'd say, I heard the words, "Put the pen down and listen." And it was clearly his voice. There was no denying it. And he told me many things. All of the things that he communicated to me are in a book called Billy Fingers. And it's exactly the same sort of thing her brother was a bad boy. He died from his bad boy hijinks and came back to his lovely sister, who I believe has a PhD. And I don't know why, but I think that just qualifies people. So he came back and he insisted that they write this book that people needed to know what it was like to be on the other side of life, what death was like over there. So when you ask me about demon possession, I'm not real sure how to answer that, other than the fact that we possess both aspects as human beings. And sometimes I believe we can lose the good parts of ourselves to the bad part of ourselves. That would be my definition of a spiritual possession. I do not believe anymore in a God, nor do I believe in a Satan, nor do I believe in evil entities like demons or anything like that. Everything that I believe in is quantified and qualified by science now, and by empirical, my experience, my empirical knowledge. That's what I want to share with you. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how you, the listener, can go and access all of this information on your own. You don't have to take my word for it. There's a place that you can go, and I'll show you, or I'll explain to you how to get there. And you can go there. It's called the Akashic. But I'll save that for just a little bit. First, I want to address what an interdimensional being is, because it's so essential to who I am. And I want to start with quantum consciousness. So you let me know if you have any more questions before I begin.
Well, quite a few questions, actually. But what I'm going to do, first of all, here is just take a quick look over and scan down what we have happening in the streaming live YouTube chat area. Shout out, of course, to Brady, Alex, and Kat Goida. Thanks for dropping by. It's always good to see and hear from the two of you. I believe Pirate Larry had dropped in for a moment or two. He does say that he is indeed still in Baja. So if anyone does have any questions or thoughts, feel free to share them with us here in the YouTube chat area. There's been a few links posted here. Joe is...
Yes, Bill Gemini, you said, but the dimensions are artificial mathematical constructs that allow us to see into three-dimensional overtime. Mm. I will address that, and I'm going to address that from a quantum mechanics view. And I understand I'm looking here to your pragmatist. So we'll all just keep a real good sense of humor here. Everybody has their own judgment, I should say, or own understanding of what reality is. And I do want to warn you a little bit, keep an open mind, because if you aren't ready to hear about the fourth dimension, you're not going to understand or comprehend anything I say to you. And so I won't take anybody here to the 12th dimension, because it's beyond a lot of people's comprehension to go there. But I will tell you that everything resonates through light, vibration, and frequency, which is all Tesla. And it's funny because you mentioned earlier about people losing themselves or everything getting all mashed up. There are things out there, there are entities out there who are called silencers. They're human beings, just like you and I. They're our neighbors, and they like to silence us. So it's really important that I keep an open mind to what you believe, and that you keep an open mind to what I believe. We are all teachers, and we are all students. So with that, I would like to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish what Joe has laid out there in the chat area, he once again states that from his perspective, dimensions are artificial mathematical constructs that allow us to see into three-dimensional overtime within the nucleus of an atom, every atom. Forces and particles that are force carriers when they are in a wave function that collapses. So, yeah, by all means. I think just to add to things here, the limited knowledge that I do have based upon what I've heard from people who seem to be a little more qualified in this area is that it has been mathematically proven that there are, I think, in fact, an infinite number of dimensions that potentially do exist. So, yeah, you know, you hear these stories about people and their timelines and things like that and higher dimensional, interdimensional beings. It's, I would say, quite possible. It's just difficult to prove those, the unfortunate thing. But by all means, Teresa, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Jaffe, and welcome everyone to this little bit of a classroom type thing. The first thing I want to talk about before I introduce you to my others, and I'll explain that just a little bit, is something called quantum consciousness. And there are a few opportunities where you really get to experience yourself as a multi-dimensional being. Very few opportunities. And connect to those other aspects of you in different timelines or dimensions or parallel existences. You know, we see as human beings our awake time, our sleep time, and then there's a point in between the two where we're almost in that daydream phase, where you're neither awake nor asleep. You're sort of in limbo. The quantum consciousness experience is one of those experiences and is often one of the highest vibrational, loving, and sacred spaces that I have the good fortune to talk about. This is a very expansive experience for most people, and a lot of people who are shamanic use it as a therapeutic tool. And for those who are ready, if you can, open up. And listen, I'm going to talk about five of these quantum consciousness. The first one is that you are a human portal to all realms of consciousness. All realms. You are a portal. So that doesn't mean that you are just a solid human being walking through your day and nothing's happening. There are things going through you all of the time. There are voices that are speaking to you. There are interactions that are taking place. Some of those interactions I called synchronicity. That's also been proven by quantum mechanics. And I'm going to use a lot of these things that have been proven so that way we don't have to guesswork on this. And back to the gentleman that we were just talking to, what he was referring to, I believe, is the slit experiment. If please say yes or no if you were talking about that. Quantum consciousness, and the second form, is our unique consciousness has the pure intention to evolve. So we cannot stay idle. We cannot remain as we were an hour ago, 5 minutes ago. We are constantly in a state of evolving. The third would be our intention to evolve embraces multi-dimensional interactions with others. Now, when I say others in this context, it's others, like other beings, like you and me. So as we go to lunch and we may rub shoulders with someone accidentally or start a conversation with someone, the beauty of all of this is that our intention to evolve embraces all of those multi-dimensional interactions with others. Now, there's an intention that we're aware of, and there are intentions that we're not so aware of. Intention creates reality. And as we unite, this is the fourth one, as we unite intentions with others, we amplify the consciousness of everything. So right now, however many people are listening to this at this particular moment, we are all hearing it. We're all forming opinions about it. We're letting it speak to us. And then we're going to rephrase our argument back or our questions back so that we can further understand it. But what we're doing that's more important is we're amplifying consciousness. Everything we're doing, everything we're saying is being stored outside of our brain in a place called the Akashic, our mind attaches to that and brings it to the brain as needed and takes things that we experience with our five senses and sends it back to the Akashic, where it stays, it remains, and it grows. The fifth is we send an instantaneous wave of evolving consciousness rippling through this holographic universe into the fabric of the very cosmos in which we feel that we are contained, but we are not contained. We are free to go as far as we want to go, both outward, and we can go as far as we want to go inward. Unfortunately, we've never been taught to look at the dimensions within ourselves. We've only been exposed to those dimensions that lie without of ourselves, of our I am. How sad is that, that we know more about the cosmos than we do about the ocean floor? That's one of my best things that I could use to, as an example of really how limited we are with what we do. Now, when we die, I said I would take you there, the quantum consciousness journey. What happens after death is that the quantum consciousness journey starts with reminding us that we are so much more than we believe we are. This knowing changes the present consciousness, and you are guided to expand beyond time and space through different states of awareness, giving you an opportunity to heal and explore other aspects of yourself and your unique personal universe. This is where you go, and you're going to experience life all over again. It just goes right before you over and over again, everything you ever did and how it affected everybody and everything. Our stored consciousness holds all the experiences in this lifetime, even those we are yet to have. We may not have had them yet, but we're going to have them. And we ask these aspects of ourselves anywhere along this current timeline to come forward to share the wisdom and healing. Now, if we could all learn just that, if we could just, you know, memorize that last line, come and ask for the wisdom and the healing, and or if you need it, you ask for it. It's there for you. If you believe in God, if you read the Bible, and you're told over and over again, if you ask, you shall receive. I don't know how much more valid that can be to a Christian listening to this conversation that we're having. We then travel through the realm of our alternate consciousness, where perhaps important decisions created a replication of you in an alternate reality. And we were just talking about where you can be in different realities, different spaces at the same time. We meet and share time with these alternates who offer you their perspective of what it was like to make a different decision than the one you made, and explore the resulting life experience. So today I made several decisions. There are also alternative me's making different decisions that have different outcomes. And I can attune myself to those alternates to see how things might have gone or would have gone had I chose to do something different. A lot of us call that hindsight. Next, we move through our parallel consciousness, where you discover what it's like to exist in the other bodies on this earth in another period of Earth's history. How many of you have an affiliation with some point in time in history and you don't know why? Now, I know a lot of men who are just obsessed with the Revolutionary War, or, you know, the one who freed the slaves. Excuse me, but I'm not good with history. But all of these different things. And, you know, they had a little boy recently who kept saying his name was such and such, and he died. His plane crashed in the ocean. They finally looked all this stuff up. Everything he was telling his parents was true. They finally took him to the place where his plane was shot down. He laid flowers into the ocean and had his closure because he could say goodbye to that other self that he once was. So we do continue on. We can choose when we come back, or we can choose not to come back. This little boy had chose to come back, but he remembered who he was before in that alternate consciousness. And I think that when men think about revolutionary wars or civil wars, especially civil wars, it seems like, I think it's because they're recalling being there. It's almost as if they have a memory there, like a muscle memory there. So we meet and share time in these alternates who offer you their perspective of what it was like to make a different decision. And then again, we go to the parallel consciousness where we see the other places that we've been in other lifetimes. Again, we make exchanges that leave all aspects of ourselves in a higher vibration. And then we visit our intradimensional self. That's an interdimensional consciousness where we experience the knowing of being in another life form and another dimension, again, for another similar exchange of energy, only not in the human form. And finally, you embrace your eternal consciousness and pause to experience that transformational energy before blending with the fabric of the cosmos itself. So that, I believe, would be the highest consciousness you could achieve, is that eternal consciousness where you decide you no longer need to come back as a human being and experience this lesson over and over and over again, taking this journey, you know, another time and another time and another time, just to get another idea or aspect of it. You can just now become part of the whole, the Akashic. So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to let that resonate.
I've got a few thoughts there for sure. It's a great stream of consciousness and, you know, the presentation or the way that you've laid things out there is quite amazing. A lot of food for thought for sure. Are you familiar at all with the Buddhist tradition and the Bodhisattva figure?
Not the Bodhisattva. I know that there are the four truths. Is it four truths? Or, well, let me just say I've been exposed to it, but I have really no memory.
It's exactly what you're talking about, actually, with this, the Bodhisattvas. They come back. Like with Jesus, he was a Bodhisattva. And, you know, in the Mahayana tradition, the Bodhisattva, they return only to help other beings. They don't come back for more cake or more sex or more Hollywood movies, you know, more rock and roll Tom Petty hits. Although there was a lot of good music, of course, that man created. I like to talk about him a little bit, too, just briefly, if we could here, now that we're on the... We're discussing death and impermanence and so forth. You know, it's interesting the way, like with George Harrison, and who was very much into Eastern religion, and Tom had such a close relationship. Bob Dylan, of course, and Roy Orbison, and I guess Jeff Lynne was the final member of the Wilburys, but very close, you know, tight karmic connection there for sure. But yeah, the Bodhisattva, that's why they return. They've liberated themselves from the wheel of rebirth. And they say, okay, these people down here are pretty sad. They need some help. Let's go. So they're sent back and they're born, of course, as humans to work on assisting people in helping liberate them from their suffering and, you know, the toil and torment and all the things, the issues that we have to deal with here on Earth. As humans, so, as well as all other sentient beings too, including animals, cats and dogs and you name it. So, yeah, do no harm. The Ahimsa principle, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or not. No harm?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, okay.
It's not that I haven't been exposed to it. It's just not something I've put to memory. You know, here's how I believe in things. If I want to remember, all I have to do is go into one of my meditations. with that as my goal. And then the Akashic will actually send that information back to me. I'll start to remember it.
We've got about 10 folks now, it looks like. I think we're up to almost a dozen there at one point, so that's great. We got a bit of a buzz here and a number of people wanting to drop in and be a part of today's show. Let's not forget, I'm not sure what it was last time around. I guess it was some music that you presented to us that happened and helped you gain admittance onto the Robin Hood. But I think, as you may recall, the captain, Long John Sinclair, the way things are set out in the ship's articles is that in order to gain admittance onto the Robin Hood to board the ship, you actually, all guests, are required to present some kind of pirate story of some sort, or just a little reference or anecdote, maybe even like, I think in your case, what you did was you collaborated with Pirate Larry and we did it that way last year. So, do you remember how that all played out?
I actually recited the poem, which I think, or he actually played it. I don't know which. It was one of them. But mine today was from Jeopardy.
I'm sorry, Jeopardy. How's that exactly?
The word arg in pirate language is from the Ordu. So, you know, if you say it like you would a pirate, it'd be Ordu, or like R-U, Ordu, arg. You know, that's the first thing I thought of, but it was funny because one of the entities that I use in my Vespers in the evening is Ordu. So I thought, wow, that is a synchronicity. So there, that's mine.
And that's the Nephilim tie-in there, I guess, is it not?
Yes, it is. I want to go back because I'm really falling for this Joe Aminon. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. Was it the slit experiment that you were referring to earlier, Joe? Can you just put yes or no?
There'd be probably about a 20-second delay there. But yeah, Joe's quite a character and a regular part of the show here, helping to just usually give us a little bit of feedback as far as the stream is concerned and how things are running from his end of things, quality audio feed and whatnot. But what he's asking here is if we've ever, me in particular, heard of the Zhao Day. So I have no idea what that's about. I'll have to think about that.
Maybe you should have him on and I'll come to his show and he can talk to about.
Well, he hacks into satellites is what he does. He's one of the original. He's a phone freaker. He's one of the original phone freakers based out of, I think it's Long Island, New York. So quite the character there for sure. And we're definitely of the pirate stock, no doubt about that.
I definitely want to speak to you, Joe, about HAARP. Please. We need to get together and talk about HAARP. That's a whole other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would like to talk to him about that. I think he might know something about HAARP that I'd like to ask him. But if you're all ready, has everybody downloaded a copy of the book that want to do so? Or would you just rather listen to me recite something for you that I think fits the subject here?
Yeah, we could do that for a few minutes, just to let listeners as well as yourself know and just to be aware of. We've got about maybe a half an hour left here to go. Time really flies here on the Robin Hood. So we could do that for a few minutes. We also really want to get into the synesthesia, I guess is it pronounced, that whole phenomenon. I know you've touched on issues here surrounding gnosis and awakening, so you might want to speak to that a little bit as far as this, your thoughts on gnosis from a spiritual standpoint. And I think that's probably enough to maybe, we can tackle for the moment at least. Now, one thing that I thought quite interesting, did you notice, I'm not sure if you, what your thoughts are on the matter, but the Visionary Arts logo, you're familiar with the, you affiliated with that web page, I guess. Is that yours or a friend's?
Can you repeat that again for me?
Visionary Arts. It's off of one of the URLs that you shared with me. It's the V and the A, Visionary Arts logo.
Yes, the Visionary Arts are a group of artists that travel around and show their work, and it's all visionary. So they have similar experiences like I have, and I was the only non-artist, the visual artist, that was asked to go down to San Cristobal in Las Chiapas and actually give a talk on mysticism.
We're definitely going to want to hear about that then, aren't we? So I don't think we've covered that to this point, at least, and not in the last show either. But let's just set that aside for the moment. We want you to address that. But the point I was going to make regarding this whole matter is how with their logo, the V and the A, for me, you know, for those with eyes to see, it was like the total purely Masonic compass and square. I don't know if you picked up on that or not. But
oh, wow. Good eye. No, I did not. No, I did not.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe they're having fun with people. Maybe they don't even know what they're doing. Who knows? I thought it was just something to make a note of for sure. On top of that, are you familiar with the term mudra?
Yes.
So you have your hand sign there. One of the photos that we used, in fact, to promote the show, the main photo that we ran with, was you with your mudra, essentially, which is a standard, what many would see as an Illuminati hand sign. You know,
it doesn't just belong to the Illuminati.
Nor does the swastika belong to Hitler. I get it. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So
why don't you explain then what's the whole intention or point behind your with that particular hand sign or mudra?
I think that symbols are extremely important. Symbols are everywhere around us. If we do not pay attention to the symbols that are around us, we're missing half of the information that is available to us every day of our lives and speak much stronger to us because it's subliminal than it would if somebody were to just walk up to you and start having a conversation. I could probably get you to lose yourself in symbology much easier than I could in reciting a poem. But I'm going to recite a poem because it's a mystic poem. And I'm not trying to ignore you. That triangular sign has several different connotations, and I just don't have one in particular that I would pull out at the moment, other than I think that I would go to the 369. Other than that, I would stay away from it at the moment. To me, it's more of a witchy thing, so I might stay away from that one. The book Mystic Verses was dictated to me by a group of entities that reside inside of me who are called intradimensional beings or interdimensional beings. The difference between interdimensional and intra is those beings that are without us, they're outside of us, but they're around us, ghosts. Some of us are haunted. Then we have extra, which is the aliens, and then we have intra. And the interdimensional beings are those that reside inside of us. When you see a little boy or a little girl talking to their stuffed animal, and they have a name and a personality, chances are they're not talking to something they've made up. It's not a part of their imagination. And if you'll just sit and listen and not judge, you'll see that the information that they're getting from their little stuffed teddy bear is very profound. And if we don't take that away from them, if we just forget the word imagination and replace that with something else, I don't know, reality, because it is a form of our reality, is the fact that we're talked to all the time. You as adults have done it when you're in the car pissed off at somebody and you're having that argument and you're arguing in your voice, and then all of a sudden you argue in their voice. But it's not really their voice. You're arguing with your interdimensional being. You may have one, two, three, several. I don't know. I feel like I have legion. So I had asked one time, and this was at Pirate's behest, that I ask the name of the other or others. And I didn't know what to call them at the time. And the answer came to me that we are the others. Now, we thought that that was maybe some sort of anagram or some kind of play with, you know, letters. And we went immediately to Greek, which we found two. One was the heretos and the other one was something like that. But it meant heresy, which made perfect sense. And then just recently somebody said to me, did you ever think that it was in your language and it's the rose? And I thought, Of course it would be the rose, because I have an obsession with roses. And so maybe they were playing with me. They wake me up at 1 o'clock and they wake me up at 3 o'clock. I've been known to get up, sit at my computer and write some of the most beautiful things ever written, in my opinion, because I don't consider them mine. In the book, I actually go to the extent of saying that the book is written by the others. I simply put them in verse form. They dictate to me what they want to say, and then I put it in a nice little verse. So everything you read in this book is not from a human being, as you would know it. And this poem is called Senses. Please listen. We believe that when we open our eyes to let the light in, those spectral dreamscapes with their aural beauty might begin. Oh, but we lose our vision with so much out there to see. We lose our ability to comprehend life's cosmic symmetry, resigning ourselves to a blindness to the beauty within. We close our eyes to the distractions that leave us blind, the ugliness they create to obscure and deceive mankind. Oh, the beauty we could behold if we could choose and learn, banish the horror, teach ourselves how to properly discern and recognize the graces and treasures left here for us to find. We listen to the noise, an impenetrable wall of sound. Words circle over our heads and then fall to the ground. Oh, we hear nothing but the judgments and insults to the brain and wonder why shells of our being are all that remain. Nothing of value spoken here. No healing words can be found. Close off that useless cacophony. Let your mind become fallow. Silence the loudness of echoes until they hum in the hollow. Oh, gentle whispers falling upon our now delicate ears. Disregard the eruptions that beat upon our personal spheres. Come out of the drowning depths and hear the song in the shallows. The senses are aware at the moment of our conception. Birth proves to diminish these coward perceptions. Oh, the most critical blow that comes from all of these, the occlusions of the beauty of individual realities, is that life lived is but a multitude of layered deceptions. We can become and overcome the toxicity of what we perceive. Choose carefully that which we hear, see, believe. Oh, that day will be filled with so much glory, the delight we will discover inside our own story when we decide to close our minds to that which deceives. And that's the end of that poem. And you can see how incredibly articulate they are about our experience as human beings. I often wonder if they've ever been human. And I've never had an answer to that question. So others in the book is spelled O-T-H-E-R-E-S. There's an extra E in there. So if you guys would like to play with that, the others, O-T-H-E-R-E-S. Come up with words like this gentleman just did not too long ago, the rose. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear what you get from that, because I really do think that there's a message in there. There is that sense of symbolism. And I'll now pass this back to Jaffe.
All right. So one of the things it sounds like you're doing is soliciting or asking for creative anagrams from the public, working with the otheress, the word that was, I guess, from the sounds of things presented to you by what you refer to as your interdimensional beings. What I wonder about, one of the things I wonder about, along with this business of heresy, which the Greek word in itself simply means choice, if you, you know, look at the etymology of that term, that's all it means, choice. So, I mean, the number of, think of the Christians or people that were a little bit, and pagan too, let's not forget as well. That's just a country dweller. That's all that means, a real simple terms. A lot of people don't know that. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, more than likely, I'm guessing. But propaganda, too, of course, in the middle of that, right there, dab smack right in the middle of that word, that term, we find the word pagan, pro-paganda. So all roads lead to Rome. But the heresy tie-in, that'd be one thing that would be interesting for you to definitely address, is because I wasn't overly clear on that. But secondly, just think of how many people have been locked up as schizophrenics over the years who have had similar experiences as yourself and have been really kind of, I guess, confused in the sense that they've been all alone with no community or support, people to help them, guide them along and provide a, I hate to use the word, but safe space, you know, just environment where they feel comfortable and they can receive some guidance and support, basically. So what do you think about that? Have you ever considered, have you ever had people threaten to lock you up thinking that, oh, well, you must be schizophrenic. Come along with us and we'll forcibly medicate you to change your way of thinking.
Schizophrenia has come to the fore, yes, and I have been analyzed, and I'm perfectly sane. I don't like using that word because I don't really want to be sane. I kind of like the fact that I have a little bit of insanity, or a lot of. I think that when one becomes sane, they quit asking the questions that could be their own salvation, and I don't think we should ever quit asking the questions. I don't think we should ever think we have the answer. You know, what I'm proposing here is just what I know so far. How many of you are familiar with Timothy Leary?
Probably most of our listeners, I'd imagine, and with the divergence and range of opinions and views, but
You just mentioned something that Timothy Leary addressed when someone had told him that they were still using mind-altering drugs, the LSD, okay? And they didn't want to stop, and they were asking, what do I do? What do I do? And his answer was so simple, yet so profound. And he said, find the others. Now, there's a synchronicity again, because we have the word others. Now, I'm sure it's not spelt the same way with the extra E, but he said, find the others. Now, something else that is synchronicity in this conversation is the fact that he also addressed the different realms or dimensions as he knew them. And he knew them as 8. People have gone on now with 10, 12, and all the way up to 26. So it just depends on really who you talk to and how they define a dimension. But I really liked Timothy Leary's philosophy, probably because I did a lot of LSD. I'll go ahead and admit it. He had this 8-dimensional thing. And one day I was just sitting and I didn't have any particular thought process going on. And immediately this thing came to me about an octopus talking to another octopus. And I call it octosensual. It's not been published yet in a book. It will be shortly. It's his 8 levels of consciousness, basically, or dimension. The story wrote itself. It was an amazing thing. It just wrote itself. And when I have automatic writings like that, I can't take credit for it. I mean, I put my name on it, but I really can't take total credit for it. First of all, it came from Timothy Leary's 8 levels of consciousness, and I just made a story out of it. And it was before the octopus became real. Right now, octopuses are real popular. I see them wearing them as necklaces and earrings and all sorts of things. And I thought, well, how weird, because just a couple of years ago, I was writing a story about an octopus talking to another and giving these 8 levels of consciousness to a woman who becomes an octopus to come down and get this information, then they must go back up onto the earth and distribute the information. So I just found that just incredible. So any thoughts on that?
Well, the 8, yeah, that's the number of infinity from what I understand. So I'm not sure if the octopus is considered infinite or not, but it was quite interesting that you would mention Timothy Leary just at the very moment Joe Emanon posted a magic Amanita muscaria mushroom in the streaming chat area. So did you, I'm not sure, did you see that before you mentioned Larry, or did that just happen?
I have something pulled up on my computer right now that I was going to go and reference. I'm deciding now I'm not going to do that because we're limited on time. But no, I didn't see it, but I will go back and look. That is synchronicity at its best, and you'll see it a lot. I hope that everybody comes back and re-listens and re-listens and re-listens to this and watches the commentary that's going on the sides of both YouTube and Skype and Facebook and Twitter at how much we're all in sync with each other and how this all kind of comes together into fruition. We think it was just a coincidence. It's not coincidence. Hancock of Ancient Aliens has a book out called The Synchronicity Key.
Graham Hancock, yeah.
Yeah. So there's just all these incredible things that occur. By the way, I don't know if you know this or not, but each arm of the octopus, I didn't know this, each arm of the octopus has its own brain.
Huh. How about that? Well, the eight-headed, was it seven-headed hydra? Or is it the eight-headed hydra?
It could be. It sounds right.
I thought it was a seven-headed. But it's interesting. This is episode 78. Last show, we had Chance, actually. Chance Garten is his surname, from Interverse Podcasts. And he was big and interested in acknowledging or talking about how with episode 77, that was the double seven, lacking the heart is what his point about that whole matter, that because with the 777, that's where you find the heart, supposedly. When I hear 777, I think immediately Aleister Crowley, of course. I don't know much about that, really, other than that he, I think he wrote a book about something that 777 was in the title. So that's quite something. But this show is 78, so I'm not sure. Hopefully there's a little bit of heart to what we're presenting here today to the world. The eight, of course, once again, the symbol and number for infinity, as well as you point out, the octopus. Now, I'm not sure, once again, just to quickly recap and refresh, just break down exactly, how does this all tie into Leary's work? He said, basically, if you could just clarify that point, when he was asked about something or another, pressed on some matter, he said, speak to the others.
Oh, yeah. He said, find the others. What he was doing was giving the best answer to the question that he could possibly give, because LSD had kind of run its course, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and this gentleman was still using quite a bit to open his mind, expand his mind, and he just wanted to know what to do. He said, I feel so alone. What do I do? You know, and he said, find the others. So because he knew that there were other people who were still using it, trying to expand their minds.
Maybe not only that, but the others, as you put it, the others that, because I believe you are, one of the things you're saying or that you are willing to acknowledge is that we all have access, I guess, to the Akashic, I hope I got that pronunciation right.
Yeah,
Akashic records and these interdimensional beings, which as humans exist within all of us. It's just a matter of whether we want to open our eyes or not, I suppose. So maybe Leary was, that's what he was getting at as well. Or both. Who knows? Why not? Why?
I would like to address the symbology back. Let's go back to that for a second. And I'm going to use words as symbols. Mystic writing is that, using words as symbols. So when you read the Bible, you're reading a mystic book. Nothing about that book is absolutely clear. It's all up for grabs, you know. And the reason that people are so afraid to come forward and say, I am a mystic. By the way, a mystic is somebody who is looking for the truth. That's basically what a mystic is. And we find it in many places and that we don't even believe we can find them. But the reason people stay so silent is for ages, people who spoke in opposition of the laws of man and God were persecuted. To speak about the ethereal world or to acknowledge communication with entities outside of our world would usually lead to them being labeled as insane, like you said, and at times could actually get you institutionalized. You know, just ask Virginia Woolf. To speak or write about anything not in the flow of the mainstream thinking would discredit anything and everything else one might say or write, handing off enlightened knowledge to those who may interpret or misuse the information could lead to unfavorable consequences, and I'm talking death. Mystic writing or speaking, or symbolic writing or speaking, is meant for those who are able to understand. There are many fables told to children that still have to be retold and explained in order for them to understand the underlying message. And that's something that I think is, because I'm a grandmother, I find when you talk about Humpty Dumpty, they're talking about a king they hated and they wanted him to fall off the wall. And they wanted him dead so that nobody could put him back together. They all have these really horrible backstories. But anyway, Jesus said to his apostles that he would reveal the meaning of his parables in private, for the common man was not able to comprehend the meaning. And given that life is a journey of discoveries, it is a lesson. If all lessons were given and understood at the onset of life, there'd be no purpose for the living. You know, I use as my metaphor for life the Wizard of Oz. You have the intelligence and the intellect, you have the compassion and the heart, and you have the bravery to go forward. And then, of course, she's always had the power to do whatever she wanted to do. All she had to do was just make known her intention. She always had it. And then we have a bad witch and a good witch, which is both parts of self, parts of ego. We have her walking through a field of poppies, which is to me representative of those people who want to silence us, who do not want us to find out the truth. And we have Oz, who's behind the curtain, the faker, the ultimate faker. And the people who live in Oz, who just go about their business, the sheeple. So, you know, you can take it. A lot of people like to take stories that they've read and they somehow can internalize that and say, I understand that, but I understand it in a completely different way than I think it was written. Well, how do we know how it was written? I don't know how the author of The Wizard of Oz meant for that to read. I just know what I took from it.
Yeah, great book and a great series. It's definitely stood the test of time.
Something that you would be familiar with, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse. Read that several years ago. Still sticks with me. The lessons that Siddhartha had to learn. And the most incredible thing is, at the very end of the book, he learns that it's from an older man who's very simple, you know, not God, but very profound, very powerful. So you do know what I'm talking about with the book Siddhartha.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I read it a number of years ago, and it was definitely it was one of the must-reads. And I think I can't recall much, although it was a story, essentially. Hesse basically just presenting the story of the Buddha as he set out on his spiritual quest and journey, leaving the castle and out into the real world where he discovered suffering. And as well as temptation. Was it the Kamala, I think, was, or Kamala, something along those lines? The young fair lady that he came into contact with. So, yeah, a classic. And it's something clearly that I should, if I get a chance, I think it's here in the ship's library, as a matter of fact. I'll have to look around and see if I can get my hands on it, or in audiobook fashion, of course, too. It's one of those great classics like the Tao Te Ching or Dharmapada, very short and concise. So,
for those of you who like a laugh, there is the Tao of Pooh, which is just adorable. So if you like Winnie the Pooh, the Tao of Pooh is just hysterical.
Tao of Willie, if you're a Willie Nelson fan, he's got his Tao of Willie out there too. So,
Yeah.
Let's see now where we're at as far as time goes. We can maybe run, we can carry things along here for just another few minutes, maybe 10 minutes. I'm thinking at the most is probably the best way of doing things. Keeping an eye on the chat here in YouTube. Joe Emanon really stepping up to the plate there today and really getting engaged in things. Hopefully able to join us in the after show. He is stating that Larry is God. Case closed. So, but before that, is synesthesia considered a disease?
No, not at all. I found out I was a synesthetic person back in the 70s. I had had an accident, and I was experiencing headaches for some time. So they went in, and I think this was when PET scans or C scans or something of that sort had just started, MRIs. I don't know what the hell they put me in. And they put me in this thing, and it made a lot of clinking noises. And what they were seeing was parts of my brain would light up when I heard certain sounds. This was at WashU in Missouri here. A gentleman came in and said, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. When you see, he showed me a piece of paper with 1 through 0, representative of 10. So does this look different to you in any way, shape, or form? What do you see? And I say, I see numbers. Are they black? Are they yellow? Are they red? I said, they're black letters on a white paper. It was the best I could give him. And he showed me letters, like the alphabet, and the same thing. So I don't have grapheme, which is the most common form of synesthesia. What synesthesia is the opposite of anesthesia. Anesthesia is no sense. Synesthesia is where your synapses overlap. So when I hear a cello that's in a B flat, I see a color of indigo, and there are many different shades of indigo, but there's a certain shade of indigo that blows me away, just blows me away when I hear it. So I can listen to music and see color from it, or I can hear the tinkling of chimes and see color from that, or feel textures. Or I also have spatial synesthesia, which is when you say January to me, January has, it has a placeholder in an oval that goes around me, and January is to my right and almost right in front of my right eye, and it's close. But if you talk to me about August, August is far, far, far away, and it's behind me. So, and they're not all in sync. You know, it's not like it's like January and then February follows that. February could be to my left, you know, that sort of thing. So, but they all hold, it's like they're little space holders, you know. So, and days of the week do the same thing. I do the same thing with. I'm so used to it now that it doesn't seem odd. First time I ever noticed it was the first time I heard the song Pictures of Matchstick Men by Status Quo. And I said to my friend, because it was a little bitty, you know, carry around record player, and I said, can you feel that? Can you see that? And she thought I was nuts. Then later on, somebody bought me the album Ohio Express, you know, with Down at Lulu's on it. And it has a couple of really psychedelic songs on it. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, and I started to realize that people started to look at me weird when I was listening to certain music. And then the real clincher came when Echoes came out by Pink Floyd. I completely just went. I'll tell you what, LSD dumbs down the synesthesia. I can have more fun with music without taking LSD than I would if I took the LSD. LSD provided something different for me when I was younger. I don't do it anymore, but when I was younger, it provided something else for me. Synesthesia on its own was just the best trip I could ever ask for. What it is, it's just an overlapping of synapses in your brain.
Gotcha. So now the word, and of course, dis-ease is simply that, it's ill at ease. Is one with this condition, I'm not sure if you were clear on this or not, but are you, when afflicted with or kind of in the synesthetic zone, if that's the right way of putting things, are you okay with that? It sounds like you're kind of, you said it's a more of a trip than acid, is what you're telling us. So it's an okay place to be for you. Is that right? Or have I totally lost the plot?
Well, my husband won't drive with me if I'm listening to Pink Floyd and I'm behind the wheel. We can't listen to Pink Floyd because my hands will leave the wheel. So I have to watch when I'm driving my car. Yeah. If I'm at a concert and I'm at a Pink Floyd, you know, wannabe concert, there's Australian Pink Floyd is a wonderful example. I can either watch the show and their conceptualization of what we should be seeing, or I can close my eyes and watch my own story. I paid for a ticket, so I keep my eyes open, is clearly what I do, because I can always come home, close my eyes, and listen to it on the stereo. Is it a problem for me? Only, not really, because it's been such a part of, I've always had it. So it's not unfamiliar to me. And so I've integrated it very well, I would say. I think as I get older, it's become more of a problem because I have a harder time choosing whether I want to experience, like I said, listening to Pink Floyd and driving is just a no-no. Can't do it.
Keep your eyes on the road and hands upon the wheel.
Anthony, I want to tell you, you'd mentioned the visionary artists, and so I'm assuming that our audience is filled with a lot of creative people. Creative-minded people are always looking to experience new things, hear new things, and are usually open to new things. It inspires them in a way. And I'd like to know the etymology of inspire, so if you've got a minute. But here's the thing. They used to think that only 1 in 2,000 people had synesthesia. The more they did their studies, and the more this became a real science, and they knew that this was real. Dr. Cytowic, C-Y-T-O-W-I-C, Cytowic, has a lot of videos on YouTube about it, is the grandmaster of it. They have decided now that possibly 1 in 20 have it. And if you are a creative individual, somebody who does crafts, photography, art, play instruments, write, anything that's artistic would be considered artistic, which to me, I think all of life is artistic. But if you're artistic, the chances of you having synesthesia are 1 in 5. So it's almost a given that you are synesthetic. If you are artistic, because you are taking the language of the Koreans and then becoming the translator into English, you know, as you would be doing. And so we take whatever we're given and we translate that into the written word or into a painting or into a photograph or into music or whatever. But we're translators of some reality other people can't possibly experience unless we translate it for them. In order to do that, we have to have that crossing of that synapsis to do it well. As a matter of fact, somebody you all know who had come out as a synesthete is John Mayer. John Mayer, the guitarist.
Sure. I mean, super talented guy. The guy, he's amazing. I'm all endlessly blown away the way that these musicians can not only write but also recite, and as with actors, of course, too, who just they can remember pages upon pages of script and dialogue and then go out on stage and present it in flawless fashion. The same with the songwriters and musicians, just they get out there and they don't need any teleprompters or nothing. Willie Nelson is pretty good with that, I think, even at the age that he is, and up in his 80s, although he might be turning to a little more of the updated technology as time goes on here. But that instant recall and ability or skill to create and recall and present things in the way that they've been laid out, I suppose. I'm not sure if that really ties into things or not. I have a half-sister, actually, who has photographic memory.
Absolutely, Jackie. That's absolutely. If you have a sister who has photographic memory, she's a synesthete.
She's incredible. Yeah, she was the valedictorian of her high school graduation class. I myself, unfortunately, more the black sheep, and I suppose that's one of the reasons why, you know, with my life story here, ended up leading to me being shanghaied and brought onto the Robin Hood to help steer things along here as far as the communication end of things is concerned. So speaking of which, I think we've pretty much reached the end of our journey here today, as I can see the ship is managing to circle around the bay and steer its way back to the docks here in Skullport Harbor. So just any last closing comments? I know you've got a few web links that we like to share with people, as well as upcoming events. But I tell you one last story, if we could just maybe spend a minute or two on it, dealing with your the event that you participated in down in New Mexico. That sounds like, because we were hoping to address that, worth getting into and laying out there, presenting to people. Unless you want to save that for the after show, of course, too. That's totally up to you. But we do have the Rogues Gallery premium content end of today's presentation and production coming up in just a few minutes. How do you want to do things here? What are your thoughts?
We can do that in the after show, but I would like to just one final thing about the visionary artists. I think that y'all should look at their art. Their art is filled with symbols. And if you're really into symbolic things or trying to read into things, their art actually does tell a story. You have to pull their art up and look at it. It's amazing the quality of what they do. I just don't even know how they do that because I'm not a painter. But I had the good fortune of going down there with them. It was way down by Central America. That one pyramid's down there. I can't think of the name of it right off the bat.
But, Chichen Itza? Are we talking?
Palenque or something. I don't know.
Sure.
We had people down there who were musicians that could make sounds like animals at the same time. And it was just bizarre. And while they were doing that, two other artists were painting at the same time to the noises that they were making. So the whole thing was synesthetic. I mean, it was just exuding. It was out of everybody's pores. And even us as the observer were just as important as the artists who were actually putting on the display, because your audience has to participate. We can't live alone. We have to have somebody to interact with. We're meant to be that, at least, at the very least, a duality.
What do you think of the way that monks live as far as their the path of solitude that they choose for themselves over the course of their lives? So, although, you know, there is solitude, but there is some community as well, too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there is community as well. It's just not spoken, I don't think. But I will say they're at a much higher realm of consciousness than I'll see in this lifetime.
The hermitages, I guess, is that's where they spend their lives, in real solitude, because it's the singular solitary retreats where they have no contact with anyone whatsoever. But quite something, the life that they do lead as monks, although some are a little bit on the corrupt side, unfortunately, which is a bit of an issue. Some real con men and women, people have to be on guard for, as always. But some real genuine people out there as well. Some that I've seen around here in Korea and come into contact with, which has been a real blessing. Do you want to just share some of your websites then before we close things off? We got some people here that are talking about joining us in the after show, including potentially our latest Patreon sponsor, Emily Anderson, who herself is a co-producer of sorts, a supporter of various podcasts, but also affiliated with the Lost Arts Radio Network. So if she's enjoyed today's discussion, maybe she'd be interested in having you be a part of one of her shows that she has running over there via the Lost Arts Radio Network. We got also Mad Dog Hopkins, and I think maybe even Pirate Joe Eminon, although his sound quality sometimes is a bit of an issue because of the satellite hacking, the way he approaches, you know, things as far as trying to hook up and get online with the rest of us. But yeah, just if we could just hear a couple of your websites And just any future, just if you have any events coming up or anything that you want people to know about before we called it a day.
Well, I'll be listing the radio stations on my page because I don't have them down here with me, unfortunately. I'm going to go to my history now and pick up all of my links for you so that I can put them on there. So to say goodbye to you before we go to the after show, I want to leave you with this. Moses went up to talk to the burning bush, who we all know was God in the Bible. And he asked him, "Who are you? What shall I call you? What is your name?" And the answer that kept coming back was, "I am. Just tell them I am." I believe that of all the things in the Bible that one should pay attention to is that statement right there. Because he didn't call himself Allah. He didn't call himself, by any of the other names of any of the other religions that have given him names. He said, "I am." And so I believe what was trying to be communicated there was, "I am you." So that when you look in the mirror and you say to yourself, "Who are you?" to the image looking back at you, the image looking back at you should be saying, "I am." And that's what we should be saying every night when we close our eyes. I am. I am all I need. I am enough. And I am the creator of my reality. So I'll go ahead and get my links up for you while you're closing the show out, okay?
And sounds good. We got, of course, your Facebook, the .com link, The Mistress Clayton. M. Teresa Clayton, easily found via Facebook. She does have a Minds profile as well, although I think it has not gone too far to this point. Maybe she'll put a little more time into developing that as things go on. MysticVerses.webstarts.com is another link she has provided here. And VisionaryArtExhibition.com is one of the final URLs. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by today and join us here, courtesy WPRPN and the Robin Hood. It's been great to have M. Teresa Clayton join us here once again. We've got, let's not forget, a couple of minds.com personalities, including Thomas Duder and the Rational Outlaw joining us here over the next couple of weeks. We're going to close out this month's October schedule with the big Halloween roundtable. That's the plan. We'll see how that all comes together and manages to play out the final Friday of the month. Until that time, and until we do meet again out on the high digital seas, it's been great having you join us here today. With episode 78 of Pirate Radio Podcasts, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Aye now, thar we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. This week, we're sending a big and hearty shout-out to our most recent Robin Hood patron, Missouri-based podcast promoter and Lost Arts radio producer, Emily Anderson. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December. with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber. Looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!